and welcome to Avachine Podcast. In this podcast, we welcome guests who are waging a struggle. My name is Frederike Geerdink. I'm a journalist who writes and speaks about power structures and those who want to tear them down. This podcast is powered by Media News, which you can visit at medianews.net. Let me explain why this podcast is called Avachine, meaning blue water. Avachine is a region in the mountains of Kurdistan, where the river by the same name has its source. The Avachine is clear, blue, and sparkling, and an inspiration in the Kurdish struggle for freedom. In this episode, I'm honored to welcome Kamna Singh as my guest. Kamna lives in New Delhi, India. She comes from the Dalit community, a group of various castes that fall outside the Indian caste system. On the basis of their caste position, they are traditionally assigned jobs that require hard labor that are deemed polluting by other caste groups. Kamna became an academic and is now engaged in research into the Dalit community. Welcome as my guest, Kamna. My first question to you is, what is the source of your struggle? Where did it all begin for you?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for having me here. I'm really happy to be on this wonderful podcast, and to be able to talk about myself, it's a huge privilege that you've granted me with. So I'd like to thank you once again before we formally begin with it. So to begin with, to answer your question, where did it all begin for me? I think it began with my birth. With my birth into an untouchable community in India. So to clarify, untouchable communities are the Dalit communities. Again, it's a group of various caste groups that fall outside the Indian caste system because of the traditional jobs that are assigned to them. So these jobs include manual removal of human excreta, removing dead skin and carcasses of animals. And traditionally, they have been these groups are made to live outside, basically survive on the fringes of the society. They were not given any access to be a part of the of the Indian society, which is again predominantly dominated by the Hindus. Because by birth I was boxed into this label of being from an untouchable community, and the baggage that comes with it, which I have realized over the past 26 years that I've been here, it's only now that I actually am a research scholar, I could connect dots and figure out what exactly was happening around me. Why was my experience so different from other Indians? So now that I look back at it, it started with my birth in the community, and then the experiences that I've had, by virtue of being a Dalit person, a Dalit woman to be precise.
Yeah. When did you realize growing up that your position was different than from other communities, and what it meant for what your struggles in life were, maybe already as a child?
I think I always knew that I was different. First, I was a Dalit woman. And then my skin tone, melanin is a caste marker in India. We'll talk more about it, about colorism and caste. So my skin tone gave away my caste even before I had to actually speak it out loud. So I remember when I was very young, probably 4 or 5 years old, we have Durga Puja here, among Hindus. I live in a Hindu settlement, by the way. We haven't disclosed our caste identity to people. But in a space like this, where my skin tone actually gives away my caste, even before I actually pronounce it. So it created a lot of problems in the sense, the four-year-old me, I was not really welcomed in pujas and everything. And I used to think, I don't know why, is this the case? Because my friends who are from the same, apartments, who live in the same settlement, but are from, upper caste background, they were allowed in those pujas while I wasn't.
They were allowed in schools, you mean? Or what?
No. Puja is a a religious ceremony of sorts, wherein girls are given money and are worshipped during certain during 9 days, wherein they are assumed to be goddesses.
So you were not allowed in there.
I was not allowed in there. I was asked to leave the premise, and it used to be very weird with me. This happened 2-3 times in a row.
Did you talk about this with your parents? Did you ask at home as a little girl, what's happening? Why am I sent away at the ceremony? What is happening?
I could not. I thought this was normal. And because this was also happening in my school, I was physically beaten by my Montessori preschool teacher. And I did complain regarding that to my parents. My parents changed my section. But then again, it did not really stop, because students would refuse to sit with me. They would touch me and they will be like, we will get polluted. So I first experienced untouchability because of my skin tone, which was again a caste marker. So these students, young kids, they would be like, we will get polluted if we sit with you, if we play with you. It was a lot of burden. And eventually, you have to sign a government document in order to get affirmative action later in life in your high school. After that, a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, she came to my house and she refused to drink water from my place, citing the reason that she is so and so Brahmin, some upper class Brahmin, and they're not allowed to do it. So yeah.
Can you explain what you meant with the affirmative action? Because I'm curious about how this system and how your position from this community affected your life and your choices. And you're an academic now, so you were able to go to school. So there is some sort of affirmative action from the government to break the system a little bit, or?
Yeah, there is some, but then again, it's a very, I'll tell you what this affirmative action is, and then we will go into the nitty-gritty. In order to ensure representation in schools, universities, and in state, government gives you certain seats that are accorded to, people from within these communities. So they have a separate entrance criteria, separate marks, which are lesser than the normal general category. So which is why people like me are able to come forward. But at the same time, this is also the most stigmatized policy of India, because majority of India, not majority in the sense, majority of Indians, the upper caste, they are in these spaces. These spaces are occupy the higher education, state, media, judiciary. These are mostly occupied by people from the forward castes or the oppressor castes. So they see affirmative action as a charity model instead of it being a parity model. They're like, they are freebies, and they spoil people like us, apparently. And it's unfair for the oppressor caste people, because apparently it compromises on the idea of merit. So this has been going on for a while. I mean, there have been a lot of discussions, debates, and everything. So when I entered my college, I was constantly gaslit into thinking I was not good enough to be there. I constantly questioned myself, my abilities, and whether I was even supposed to be there in the first place, whether I took away somebody deserving seat. It's much later when my decision to be an academic was not my decision. It was more like an inquiry into my own origins, because I could not find my place in the history at all. As I don't know what to make sense. How do I make sense of my existence? How do I make sense of where I came from? What my life has been. I was made to believe that my history was of shame while it was of oppression. It took me 7 years and my unconscious decision of being into academia to just explore my, where I came from, to make sense of my origin. Right now, people from my community, we do not trust the state, because again, it's dominated by one particular caste group. And even Muslims, they do not have faith in, like, you know, all the minorities, Dalits and other minority groups, they do not have faith in the state because we do not have representation. Like, who will speak for us if we are not in those spaces? Like, it has, like, the charity model has to go. It has to be parity basis. So, like, you know, the topmost caste, like, it's only 3% in number, and they are overly represented in all the spaces. So you, this cannot be like a merit of merit. This cannot be due to merit.
Obviously.
Like, you know, every, yes, with every generation, you accumulate certain wealth, tangible goods. Like, caste does, like, I mean, caste gives you different kinds of capitals, social capital, cultural capital, and economic capital. So people like me right now, I'm relatively in a, like, advantage space, as in I have, like, you know, my basic survival things in place. I have food to eat. I have a house where I can live. I'm safe. But again, like, in terms of psychological safety and everything, I cannot even, like, proudly proclaim about my caste identity or, like, you know, my true origins. I'm constantly on my toes, because the moment I'm going to tell people that I'm from this community, I will be, like, you know, move to, like, you know, my original space. Like, again, they will reduce me to something called walking carrion. That is stripping an individual of all their earned identities, of all their, like, you know, accolades, educational accomplishments, and reducing them to their caste identity.
But you already said before that it's very hard also to hide your caste position because of the color of your skin.
Yeah.
But now you try to hide it anyway. Is it more easy because you have this position as an academic now?
I'll tell you what, I don't hide it. It's like I have to hide it in certain spaces where I don't feel safe. So in my university, I'm very much out there. Right now on the podcast, I'm very much out there. I don't feel unsafe. But then where there is a threat, like, you know, I have been like a sexual abuse victim for like so many times within the same apartments. And I don't, now it makes sense to me. Like, why was it, like, okay for somebody to think that they could get away with it? Because again, one, I was a woman. Again, then I was a Dalit woman. Like, nobody would believe me. Nobody has believed me. So it's taken me so much time to actually psychologically they feel that I am safe. Markers wherein that you can use to identify people's caste, or sometimes people actually ask you on your, like, you know, on your face, what caste are you from? So this has been my experience, because my skin tone rouses suspicion, so people directly ask me. So one question I've, like, grown up with, it's like, if you are a Christian, so Christians in India are of two types. One are converts from upper castes, and the other ones are, like, converts from the lower castes, like Dalits. So basically people converted from Hinduism to Islam and to Christianity to evade the stigma of caste. They thought that once they leave the religion that accords them a lower space, lower rank, they will probably evade, like, you know, the caste system. But it did not happen. So a lot of times I get this question, like, on my way, if I'm a Christian. So that essentially implies if I'm an erstwhile untouchable woman. So it makes sense to me now. And sometimes people, like, I mean, my neighbor, for example, we've been lying about this for so long, because we know that the moment we are going to tell them about it, like, you know, the way they, like, you know, interact with us is going to completely change. So my neighbor, my school teachers, and, like, people randomly interacting with you just ask you about your caste identity. We live with, like, you know, separate surnames, because in India, like, there are different kinds of caste markers that you can use to identify people, like, you know, where they're from. So I use a caste ambiguous surname just so that, again, like, you know, in order to, like, in an attempt to pass, probably, like, my parents have been using this surname, so I also have this. But Singh surname that I use is traditionally used by Rajputs in India. Again, like an upper caste. So a lot of people ask me, like, if I am this. So I was like, you know my full name, then why are you asking me this question again? Are you trying to, like, you know, pressurize me into, like, you know, thinking if I'm an original Singh or, like, you know, like, not. I have been accused of theft by shopkeepers based on how I look. I had to use my English language to defend myself in those situations. These are connotations, negative cultural connotations, social and cultural connotations associated with being Dalit. That one, you are lazy, you can't do intellectual work, you are thief. Anything lowly that you can think of, anything inferior that you can think of within the Indian context, it automatically has its roots in the caste system.
So it has many, many markers, and it's also very old. It's very rooted in Hindu religion. And all these things together make it hard to break, I suppose, because I think many people outside India think that the last decades, maybe the caste system has become less influential, but that's not the case. It's very hard to break.
It's become more dynamic, and it's going to stay. It's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. Though we live in a caste ambiguous, I mean, like, mixed caste locality, but here people are still trying to find out our caste identity. And the moment they find that out, you are alienated and isolated from, like, you know, all the cultural functions that happen, all, like, you know, like, all the gatherings or, like, meetings of the society that happen, decision making that happens, you are, like, you know, removed from that. Nobody wants to, like, have to, like, nobody wants to do anything with you because of your caste identity. Then a system that pushed us into this, and now we have, like, you know, we have again going against the system, we have, like, you know, created the space for ourselves, and now the same system, like, tells us that, you know, we are trespassers here. So the moment our caste identities are revealed, you are back to square one. You don't belong here. You will be stripped of all, like, you know, your whatever degrees you have, whatever level of education you have, you are again removed, like, you know, from that. Like, everything else is removed. Your chosen identities are, like, taken away from you. And the only identity that is imposed on you is that you are a quote-unquote low caste. Dalit has again become a self-chosen term, a political term by the community. Because earlier than that, there was a Gandhian term that was used for us. That is Harijan. Harijan means children of God. By telling us that we are children of God, Gandhi created a segregation between us and quote-unquote other people. What I'm trying to say is, like, my community is like any other community. We have our own, like, we have a life. We laugh on some day, we celebrate festivals, we have our bad days, just like any other community. We have good people, we have bad people, we have angry people, we have happy people, just like any other community. And the only distinction that is that there is the history of centuries of oppression, like systemic oppression that kept us socially backward and educationally backward. Because Hindu scripture legit says women and Dalits or the untouchables, untouchable, like, the term is self-explanatory, that are supposed to be kept away from, like, you know, any kind of education. So these are, like, really rigid caste rules. Even today, you open the newspaper, people get killed for having a mustache. Like, I think last month, a person from Meghwal community in Rajasthan got killed for having a mustache, because mustache is traditionally, like, a symbol of power that only, like, the caste privileged get to sport. So this person, this 28-year-old man, a healthcare worker, he was killed for having a mustache.
Wow.
And you open the newspaper, you Google things, people get killed for something as basic as sitting with an upper caste and having food.
Still, you have become an academic. Was that like a choice? Like, I want to understand what's happening here and try to weaken the system, or how did it come about? And that you also study and research this community.
It was like a lot of things. I think it was not intentional. I entered. I did my bachelor's in English literature I entered that course without knowing what will I do, beyond this. Nobody in my family has been educated enough or who has done, such a course to tell me, how can I, go ahead in my career. So I just stumbled from one course into another, bachelor's to master's, master's to my MPhil, hoping that maybe if I do this course, if I somehow manage to work hard enough and procure a seat in that course, people will finally acknowledge that I exist, that I'm smart, that I'm intelligent enough. And here I am, and then gradually, again, when my research program started, I chose to work on Dalit women. I was I need to figure out my own existence so that people from outside cannot impose their narratives on me.
And what aspect of Dalit women's lives do you study? It had to do something with diaries, right?
I have worked on the two autobiographies written by Yashika Dutt and Sujata Gidla in English language. They are two women from the community, first-time writers, first-time authors. Yashika Dutt is also a journalist. She has been writing, but then it's her first book, and the title of the book is Coming Out as a Dalit. So again, it's she is a daughter of a bureaucrat, again somebody who holds a very who traditionally has to holds a very a very prestigious position within India. But then how, despite having that, job, still she could not get rid of, the stigma that was, enforced on her because of her caste identity. Mm-hmm. She talks about it in her book, about how she had to constantly be on her toes and, not look like a Dalit person, not act like a Dalit person. In all this, it was more about, constantly trying to get rid of the box that people are, forcing upon you. Constantly running away from that box that is probably tied to your ankle and you can't really get rid of it.
Yeah. Is this an old book or rather recent?
No. So it is a very interesting thing that the first autobiography by an Indian man came in late 19th century, and the first autobiography by a Dalit woman in English language has just come in 2017, and the second one in 2019. It has taken us this long to write in English.
So you are researching that now to how do you think it can contribute to, for example, raising awareness about this and raising awareness about how difficult it is to create a life outside the position society constantly wants to force you in?
I think both Gidla and Dutt's book, Gidla's book is titled Ants Among Elephants, Making of Modern India and An Untouchable Family, something the title is like that. So these two books actually were coming back to a place where I finally belong. I've never really read narratives like this in my textbook, in my entire education system. Even when I've read about caste, it's from the other perspective, the privileged perspective, which basically boxes caste into it presents us as in two ways. One, either as a very poverty-stricken, very impoverished and dying person, very frail, sick, dark-skinned, like, you know, person with no money, no food to eat. This is one representation. And the second one is of an opportunist Dalit person who takes advantage of, like, you know, reservation and takes away seats of, like, you know, people. These are the only two ways in which people, like, you know, talk about Dalits. And by people, I mean the caste privileged, which are dominating other, like, you know, all these spaces where discussions around caste happen without actually having a Dalit on board, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in bridging the gap between, like, you know, these two representations, narratives that are coming from the community speak for people like me. Like, we are like any other community. We have all kinds of people. We have geographical differences, class differences, and so many other differences. We come in all shades. Like, you know, I have friends who are very fair, who are dark-skinned, who are short, who are tall, who are really smart, who are not interested in studies. And it's like we have a variety of people just like any other community. So it basically humanizes these texts, such texts from the community, humanize us and sort of give us that space where we are finally, like, able to see ourselves as people.
And you also work as a model, right? Can you tell me why you started that work also?
Again, I was convinced that the body that I have is not good enough, is not desirable enough. But then I was like, I am also a body. Like, I have equal right on the space where I am. And I want to occupy my own space. So till when am I going to, like, operate on the internalized gaze that I have, which tells me I will never be good enough? That the way I look is something, like, you know, blasphemous. It's like, you know, it's blasphemy to look like me. Like, you know, it's blasphemy to be me. So it came from that. I wanted to, like, you know, invert that gaze outside and actually look at myself for who I was. But then when I entered these spaces, I realized, I mean, these are spaces that, like, you know, again, are not really, have not been available to people like me for generations. Like, when we imagine, like, a model, we mostly think about, like, you know, a person from a privileged caste group or class group, actually both, privileged caste and class group, mm-hmm. who can afford skincare, who can afford certain kind of food, certain kind of a lifestyle, and keep up with it. And who looks a certain way too, like the appearance-based, like, I mean, the aesthetics of, like, appearance are mostly Eurocentric and Brahminized. When I say Brahminized, I mean very upper caste, like upper caste and upper class looking people with clear skins and everything. I mean, I think I have clear skin, so I can't really, I mean, so that's just, like, one thing. But again, I never really, I mean, like, it's not like I've always had clear skin and, like, all these things that I'm able to afford right now. I was always able to do that. It wasn't the case. But then, like, you know, within these spaces, I had, like, you know, all kinds of experiences, both good and bad. Sometimes, like, people were nice to me. The other times they were, like, you know, patronizing, backhanded compliments about my skin tone and everything, and then asking me about my caste identity again. I was sitting at Hyatt Regency, like a very fancy hotel in here. I was working with a makeup artist. So she, while using makeup on me, she would, like, you know, ask me my caste identity in passing, and, like, you know, would also, like, you know, tell me to do things to, like, you know, change my appearance, as in lighten my skin tone and all that. And she did not pay me, like, you know, she did not pay me anything, actually, now that I think about it. So those were instances. And then my pictures have been used without my consent to advertise on various platforms. And I've been paid either nothing or very less. So that's the economic part of it. And then again, people asking me my caste identity in there, like, not having the foundation of my skin tone, and all these things were there. But then, like, again, a very good thing that happened with me, like, when I entered here, was that, you know, I, like, a part of me accepted myself, accepted the way I looked, and, like, you know, I grew more confident about it. that maybe I am not as hideous looking as I think I am, because I am like a Dalit person. Women from the Dalit community, 70% of them are anemic, and like both
are
in
anemic.
Rural, yeah. So there are health hazards. There are like, you know, no, they don't own land, and like the NCDHR, National Crime Record Bureau, like, you know, suggests that, you know, every 2 minutes a Dalit woman is raped and killed. To read
every
such
two
things,
minutes.
Yeah, it's, to read such things every day, and then honor killings, like people getting killed for marrying like a lower caste person. So all these things, it's not like it has lessened in any way. And no. Then to hear people from the privileged communities, like, you know, talking about caste in a very like condescending way, it's another problem. It's like the upper caste or the oppressor caste, they would talk about caste, but in a very condescending Gandhian way, wherein they will, like, you know, deify us, call us children of God, but then not do anything about the problem at hand. I think it's a very, like, problematic thing, which I also see in the case of gender. They will call us goddesses, the women, but then they won't do anything to ensure the safety or to, like, you know, actually take up measures to do something about the problem at hand.
It's very tricky, because it sounds beautiful to be called the children of God or the goddesses, but actually it's not.
It's not. It's condescending, because if we are children of God, then who are they? You are creating a segregation. You are, like, by calling us children of God, but then we are the ones who, like, you know, who bear the brunt of, like, everything that is wrong in the society.
You said before that the system is not going to go away.
Yeah.
But what is your goal as an academic or as a Dalit woman? Like, how do you, in such an environment, and, you know, you don't think it's going to go away, so what can your goal be?
I have a younger sister who is 8 years younger to me. So when I look at her, I want her to be able to, like, you know, assert herself, to be able to be comfortable with the idea of who she is, to, like, for her to know where she is coming from, so that nobody can gaslight her into thinking that she is inferior. So I want that for the entire community, that people from the community, irrespective of where they are coming from, everyone should have a chance to realize their potential, and no, like, labels should be hounding them constantly, so that they shouldn't have to, like, you know, constantly prove that they are not inferior. So the only thing that I, like, this is something that came to my mind even when my dissertation was in my hands, that what exactly am I doing? What exactly is this dissertation going to contribute to? It's like, I don't know how big or small impact I can create, but then I try to make that small dent in the definition of what being a Dalit, like, has to mean. Like, if I'm able to question the negative cultural connotations associated with Dalit, probably somebody else who is listening to me right now, or probably is going to read my dissertation at some point of time, they are going to question those definitions too. Because again, like, to accept the things that are thrown at you, like, in the name of history and everything, because who gets to, like, write history? Who has, like, people who have the tools, who are privileged enough to have education, they have, like, you know, they write the history. And people like me, who are, like, we come from families, like, who's only first, like, second or we are only first, second or third generation learners within the community, because our education only started after independence. Before that, we were not even given the right to sit in schools. I mean, I have heard countless stories from my own family members, like, my mother's brother actually passed away at the age of 45. So when I was, like, really young, I used to go to visit him. And every time I would go there, I would like he would welcome me with a different religion. He would be like, I've converted to Islam. And second time when I'm going to visit him, I have converted into Christianity. I could never figure that out as a child. What was this? Because he would take me to church. He would take me to mosque and everything. And later I realized it was because he was trying very hard to, like, you know, get away from the caste system. He did not want himself to be identified with caste. And he passed away at the age of 45 due to diabetes. I mean, and again, diabetes, hypertension, these are chronic, like, you know, these are like ailments that happen to people because of chronic stress. Mm-hmm. So right now, because you asked me what has caste become today, it has become this, that people don't like, untouchability has like acquired a very new meaning like today. They don't say it, but they can institutionally, like, you know, chuck you out of the system without actually saying anything the moment they know you are from that community.
What gives you hope?
I feel fellow Dalit women across the world who are doing great work to, like, you know, raise awareness about the caste system and how it impacts, like, people. I'm trying to ask for accountability so that people like me, like, I can also lay claim to being an Indian as much as anybody else. I'm trying to find my own, like, homeland, and this is just my one step towards it. And everybody, my friends, like, you know, who are from the caste, like, you know, upper caste background, like, you know, the oppressor caste backgrounds, some of them, like, have actually, like, taken therapies to understand caste phenomenon better. And in fact, like, my own partner, who is, again, from a caste privileged background, he actually went to therapy so that the trauma, like, you know, that I carry, he could understand that, so that it doesn't impact our relationship.
And I hope you're going to be successful, or as Kurdish people say, serkeftin.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me here.
You've been listening to Avashin podcast, powered by Media News. Your host was Frederike Geerdink. The music you heard was composed and performed by Ula Sheshil. I would highly appreciate it if you shared this podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or wherever you hang out online so more people can find it. Thank you in advance, and until the next episode of Avashin Podcast.